Okay. Let's get started, everybody. Good to have you all with us. So I am doing my world-famous impression of David Ullard, who is taking a well-deserved vacation this week. So what I will take chair the call today. We have an hour, and I want to try and make the very best use of it. I have some of my colleagues with me, and I hope that we can focus most of the call today on sharing with you where we've got to, thanking you very much for your feedback and all the other feedback we've collected from different meetings and discussions during the ICANN 68 meeting and other discussions on the list. And we will run through very quickly how we've got to where we are now, which is essentially the beginning of a draft block schedule, which with some tweaks to try and overcome some of the barriers that we still foresee. So I'm going to allow at least half the call for the block schedule and discussions around it, because I think the major opportunity today is to get a sense of what people feel about the format, get a sense of what we feel about plenaries, and what kind of plenary we think we might want. Are there any obvious topics that jump out? And then to be able to allow time for some discussion around the pre-meeting week and how to make sure that we maximise the time available for intra-SOAC meetings, that is your working meetings, as well as maximising the lack of conflict for the plenaries. In summary, just to kick it off, the feedback that we received, which was fantastic on the discussions, left us with sort of three key areas. The first area was the question of translations and interpretations. And this, I think, was the general feedback we've had so far on this is that after ICANN 68, we're on the right track. We may even be potentially at the destination or close to the destination. And that we now have in place a solution that allows us both to maximize the amount of languages we can offer simultaneously, but also to do that fully remotely, which is what we did in the Kuala Lumpur meeting, if necessary. And that gives us a lot of versatility moving forward. And I'm going to ask Sally to update you on that in a minute. On the second area, we talked about the limitations of Zoom. And we got a lot of good feedback about this, and there was a lot of detail, but in essence, what we appear to be dealing with is, if you like, a kind of a trade-off between the convenience of the Zoom meeting format, where everybody can see each other and they know who's in the room, but as we found out in the Kuala Lumpur meeting, it can be prone to Zoom bombing. And as you all know, we switched to the webinar format during the 68 meeting, and that has other advantages, but it does have the disadvantage of not being able to see who's in the room. So I've asked Ash to join us today very quickly to update you on what kind of options he thinks we have as we look out to the Hamburg meeting, and to hear a little bit of feedback from you on what the sort of trade-offs are that you feel comfortable with, and there will be some trade-offs. And then finally, the other key topic that came up was the question about time zones, and there was quite a long discussion about this on the last call. And this is, of course, always a problem at ICANN meetings, whether we have them face-to-face or not. It was particularly pronounced this time as we had the meeting in the Asia time zone. And here we face essentially a different trade-off. And here I would say the trade-off between having the sort of productivity versus representation. So there's a lot of discussion saying we think it's very important to have the meeting in the local time zone as planned, part of the meeting strategy that we rotate the meetings to encourage local participation. And the team will be able to tell you that we saw very good participation from the Asia-Pac region at this meeting, so that seems to be borne out. But then we also have this question about the difficulty of participating if you are working for a week effectively through the night. And this meeting time zone was particularly brutal for the U.S. East Coast, and the Hamburg meeting time zone will be particularly brutal for the U.S. West Coast, as well as, you know, not ideal for the East Coast or even parts of Asia. So on the one hand, Europe offers some benefits in the time zone, but it also offers some disbenefits. So what we've tried to do is to come up with a potentially creative way of thinking about how we organize the time we have available to us, try and minimize that impact, to try and maximize the productivity that we get as we interact and participate in the different issues we want to work on and discuss, and minimize, but also maximize the participation, not just from the local region that we're in, but from everybody around the world. So we're going to take you through a suggested block schedule, which Tanzanika is going to present to you, and that's what we'll form the body of the call to discuss. Any comments, any questions? You can see the agenda in the room. Would anybody like to add anything before we start? I'm watching the room. I can't see any hands. So on that basis, I'm going to hand over to Sally and then Ash, just to catch us up on those first 2 points on where are we at and what do we think is likely to be feasible for Hamburg on translation interpretations, what do we think we need, and also for Zoom. So I'm going to go to you first, Sally.
Great. Thank you so much, Sally, and hello, everyone. I don't speak often on these calls, so for those of you who don't, I've not met or talked with before, I head up the Global Communications and Language Services teams at ICANN.org. So what I thought I would do today is share with you a little bit of the background of interpretation, what the results were from ICANN 68, and some things that we're going to be doing to continue to improve the quality of interpretations going forward. So from a pure service perspective, we were really pleased with the performance of the remote simultaneous platform that we selected using Congress Rentals as our provider for ICANN 68. As you may know, interpretation happens to be one of the most complex aspects of running the virtual meetings, and that's for several reasons. One is that Zoom doesn't provide the level of support that we need to provide interpretation in 6 unique languages in real time. For each session where interpretation is offered, we require a minimum of 3 interpreters, and that's because of the taxing nature of real-time interpretation and having to navigate accents, terminology, changing speakers. So during in-person meetings, interpretation and the interpreters perform a type of relay where they almost tap each other on the back when it's time to switch out because of the need to just take a break. In a virtual setting, that time is compressed, and it's reduced to 10 minutes because of the sheer focus and concentration. So that's something we had to take into account and making it more complex in a truly remote environment. And then finally, our participants need a stable, reliable, and easy-to-use tool. So all of those were aspects we had to think about. And for ICANN 68, the team rigorously tested several different tools, and you know that we ultimately selected Congress Rental. It integrated smoothly with Zoom, it was simple to use, and it was stable. It was well used, so we were really pleased to see the level of use. And in the past, we haven't really been able to track who uses the interpretation tools and in what language, but we were able to track usage for ICANN 68 because of the use of this platform. So I thought you'd be interested to know that approximately 17% of all attendees use the interpretation platform. 41% of them use the mobile app, and 59% access their language through the web. Now, on a daily basis, an average of 295 attendees took advantage of the interpretation platform. And the way this breaks down is that 15% on average of all GAC session attendees used interpretation. 23% of ALAC attendees used interpretation, and then 10% of all plenary attendees or participants used the tool, which are good numbers. We can provide more detail on language if necessary, but we didn't know that all languages were used. And although it's not a complicated system, it was a new system for the community. So one of the things that we did was to help participants adapt quickly, the org team offered 2 sessions during prep week on how to use the tool. And they were well attended by staff and the community and the board, which made the transition on day 1 of ICANN 68 fairly issue-free. There were a few people that needed assistance, but generally it was an easy-to-use and adopt tool. From a delivery perspective, we had no degradation in service over the days of the event and the meeting. and we never had to switch to the backup system we had in place, which was a great thing. We'll always have that backup system, but we didn't need it in this case. Where we did run into issues was in the variation of the audio quality of the presenters. And there's two particular issues that are attached to that. And one is just the human nature, natural tendency to speak too quickly. So that makes it a challenge for presenters. So we're always trying to slow presenters down. One of the things we're working on is a presentation on guidance for all session presenters that will help them with easy to use tips and tools on how to present in a way that can be managed by the interpreters and will just be helpful for attendees. The second aspect is the type of equipment used by the presenters. It varied widely. And if you had quality equipment, it was easier for the interpreters to interpret the spoken word. But when there were technology issues, maybe poor mics or headsets that weren't working particularly well, or people were using their computer mics, then there were challenges with that. So one of the things that we are looking into is how to provide equipment, a good headset and mic for staff, executives, board, and some session presenters, particularly with GAC and ALAC. And so that's one of the things that we're looking into doing. Regarding our transcriptions, one of the things that we focused on was providing a quick turn for clean transcriptions of the sessions. And we'll continue to do that in the future. That's really the updates. The primary things that we're going to be working on are the technology and the equipment, and continuing to look for ways to potentially add sessions, to work with the community on what are the most important sessions for interpretation to be available. And with that, Sally, if I didn't miss anything, is there anything else you wanted me to address?
Thank you, Sally. That's very helpful. And I can see that Sebastian is saying in the chat that these are the webinars to introduce the tools were a great idea, that the figures are impressive. And he's making the excellent point that a slow way of speaking is important when we don't have interpretation. This is a great point. And I thought it might, we don't need to discuss it now, but as I was, I'm one of the people who speaks very quickly, which I know can cause problems for people if I'm presenting, she said very slowly. this might be something we want to have a look at when we're preparing people, particularly presenters, for the Hamburg meeting along with the technology. I think it's a great point, Sebastian, and I know it can really cause problems, even for native English language speakers, or at least in my case.
Yeah.
I don't see any hands up, but we can take some questions after. I suggest we go to Ash next.
Sally, I'm sorry. Sebastian's hand is up.
Oh, I do apologize. Sebastian, please.
Sorry, Sally, but thank you very much, Sally's great introduction. I know that it's just a question of word, but it's important. When you talk about the attendees from ALAC, you were thinking about the attendees from at large. ALAC is just 15 people at the at large advisory committee, but the people are elected by at large. And it's important where you talk to the people, you talk at the good level. I know that it's quite tricky because the other organization, CCNSO, GNSO, GAC, is a full group, but ALAC is just the 50 people. And my second point is that, yes, it's definitely a great improvement, the interpretation. Really a good job, both by your team and by the interpreters who are doing an amazing job. What is important is also that the accent of the people, even when you are not translating or when you don't use the translation tool, it's very difficult to go from an Indian accent to a Texan accent to a London accent. And for some people like me, some are more difficult to understand than the other. Therefore, the slowdown is quite important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Xavier. Yes, great points on the at-large and the ALAC.
Yeah, thank
you. Okay, let's go to you next, Ash. And if anybody would like to ask Ash a question after this, please put your hand up and I will come to you.
Thank you, Sally. So talking of technology, the backbone of our virtual meetings continues to be Zoom. We're committing to using Zoom as the platform of choice after having looked at many other potential possibilities. Just under 2 years ago, as you'll recall, following the Puerto Rico meeting. And Zoom has had their fair share of press. We have been working very closely with the Zoom product development team and legal team on understanding what they're doing, understanding their roadmap, and frankly, deeply influencing their product roadmap over the last year or so, so that the features that we now have access to were provided faster for ICANN's benefit than for anyone else in the world. We were included in the pods of people that they cast a net over to ask for early help and validation. And much of that was made available during the last meeting. As Sally Costerton pointed out, we do have a choice, and that choice is between the Zoom session rooms, which provides the facility through which everybody can see everyone else and can chat. And the other is through Zoom webinars, where only the panelists are visible to the attendees, and the attendees cannot see one another. We switched from one to the other, and we did a blanket switch, if you will, in course of the last meeting, because of the behaviors of people, which was to come in uninvited and Zoom bomb. We recovered from those fast enough. Frankly, when I look at the time to recovery on each of the incidents that occurred, and there were more than, I think there were several, let's leave it at that, the recovery time was under 2 minutes in the worst case. So that was good recovery insofar as that goes, but it was embarrassing to see the platform being abused. Now, the reason I wanted to present is to basically make you aware that we have the choice that we do. If we choose to have the session rooms be made available for all sessions other than the plenary session, then we do run the risk of continued Zoom bombing with the prospect of quick recovery, as we have shown we're capable of. The plenary sessions, of course, we would like to continue to use the broader platform, the webinar platform. It makes sense for us to do that during the plenary sessions. The numbers can be quite unpredictable, and certainly over 1,000 Zoom themselves recommend that we use the webinar format as opposed to the room format. Now, we have some early thinking about how we can potentially protect ourselves from Zoom bombing. That would entail verifying the participants ahead of time. There are many mechanisms that can be used to do that. We've been talking about those possibilities. We've also been in contact with Zoom to see whether some of the session room features can be incorporated into their webinar product. It's early days in those discussions, and that's a fairly deep-rooted kind of product development problem that we're posing for them. So they're not willing to rush, neither are we willing to rush into a solution that may be half-cooked, because I'd much rather have predictable solutions that are safe than a half-cooked solution that blows up in our face in course of one of our virtual meetings. So that's everything that I had to report to this team. What we are seeking, to be clear about the ask, is some feedback today on any strong preferences there may be, short of telling us to either find another platform, which we're not going to be doing, because there aren't as good platforms. We've already tested that field out. And, you know, frankly, the best we are in a position to do right now is to work closely with Zoom and their product development organization to see how far and how fast we can push their product development to meet our requirements. Thank you.
Thank you, Ash. I have Bruna and then Manal in the queue. Bruna, go to you first.
Thank you very much, Sally. And thank you, Ash, for the presentation. And for starters, I would like just to acknowledge that the time of recovery was indeed really good and fast. Obviously, those situations are rather unpredictable, I mean, in terms of the extent and the amount of that they would happen and what will actually happen with the rooms and the abusers and so on. But indeed, it was a really good recovery. But at the same time, I think that's kind of something that was that could happen when we opted for an open online meeting with links who were publicly available and indexed. So it's kind of a one hard situation, but also in agreement with the open meeting format that I can decided to keep alongside the virtual meetings. I just wanted to mention one little experience with RightsCon that's happening right now. And RightsCon has achieved a model in which they can, and they have been embedding the video of the bigger meetings, kind of what will be our webinar, our open forums at ICANN, but they're actually embedding the videos with a chat on the meeting app or the meeting website environment. So it's like the closed environment that could be done with our app or anything like that. But that also kind of gives us slightly more transparency in terms of who else is in the room, who else has RSVPs for that meeting, and also allows us for having the chat. Because while I do appreciate the webinar mode, I do think it's a little for the sort of meetings we were used to have and so on. So I would be really willing to learn more about if we are willing to change that format or even to give more transparency to that one. Because I do think we have changed into a lot of the formats and it was good. But the webinar one is the one which I still find myself struggling, especially in terms of lack of interaction and about not knowing who else is in the room. So apologies for the long intervention, but that was it.
Thank you, Bruna. So I'm just going to summarize and again back to Ash when we've taken all the questions, if that's okay. So that's about embedding the video channel inside a private space, such as our website or our app. And Bruna's saying she wants the opportunity to be able to chat. Manal, next to you.
Thank you very much, Sally. And before talking about the Zooms, just very quickly to put on record our thanks for the providing real-time interpretation in principle, but also for going the extra mile and providing to the GAC and ALAC, I understand, all six UN languages, and for the GAC, Portuguese as well, but also for the quality of service that has been provided. So deep appreciation. On the Zoom, again, I don't have an exact, I'm going to speak about the pros and cons because like everyone else, we got frustrated by the working sort of in a black box, not knowing who's within the attendees and make it difficult to chat and so on. But again, using this for the GAC, it gave us also an opportunity to have the GAC within the panelists so that we can identify them easily when giving the floor. So it also turned to be useful in another way. And my question also is whether this segregation between panelists and attendees, whether there is something similar for the chat as well. And I'm saying this because the separation turned to be useful for the GAC because we're committed to have open meetings and be very transparent, but at the same time, it got very distracting at certain points in time to identify the comments from the GAC regarding communique drafting and the work we're doing versus other chats that may be not really directly relevant to the communique drafting, just as an example. So at this point in time, we're just interested in investigating all the features and all the options. But in all cases, I think if there is an opportunity for everyone to see who is participating in Zoom, I'm sure it would be good to have this in place. So I'll stop here and
thanks, Manal. Yeah, that's where, so you're making a specific point there, which I just wanted to note. This, well, you're making several points, but the specific point I wanted to just throw to Ash is this idea of segregated chat channels. Which allows you to focus from, you know, if you've got multiple chats going on in the same meeting, it provides a bit more definition and focus, which I think is an interesting observation.
Yes, and just to be clear, just to be clear, we're happy to have this also transparent and seen by others.
Not a private chat. That's a different thing.
Exactly.
Okay, go to you next, Jonathan Zook.
Thanks, Sally. Jonathan Zook, off the record. I already put this in the chat, but I just wanted to bring it up verbally for people that aren't following the chat. I think the stakes associated with Zoom bombing are much lower in meetings that are involve just adults. And I feel like that the downside of the Zoom bombing is minimal in this context compared to the downside of switching over to the webinar format. And the lack of interactivity that it entails. So I think the at-large will definitely favor for its sessions the meeting room format and would encourage others to prefer that as well because it would enable better participation by us in those sessions. So I think it's worth the risk. And there are mitigation, as Ash mentioned, there are mitigation measures that can be taken and have been taken by others to minimize the chances of Zoom bombing. But I just don't feel like it was that big of a deal, given that we're all grown-ups.
Good feedback. Thank you, Jonathan. So we'll take the trade-off on the Zoom bombing, and we'll do everything we can to mitigate it. That would be your verdict from the at-large's perspective. I that's very helpful. Jonathan Robinson.
Thanks, Sally. I'll try and be as brief as possible. I think that the variation, the possible variation on a per group, per meeting basis is an attractive option. But I think I also, you know, personally at this stage see it similarly to Jonathan Zook and others. And you'll see my suggestion in the chat that whilst it won't lock out the problem everywhere, balancing the level of frustration that I heard expressed with the solution that we had at ICANN68, I think opening up the meetings a little with some, you know, accepting that full security is only possible if you do that and partial security. I mean, I heard criticism of the fact that we just publish the schedule and allow anyone to see that, and there may be a way of doing a partial security, and while that won't stop a determined Zoom bomber from getting in, it might substantially reduce the frequency of that event happening. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan. And just as there are two Jonathans on this call, there may be more, there are two Sallys, and it's been made clear to me that I haven't explained for the record what my department is. I head up engagement for ICANN. So the two Sallys work very closely with each other, which is even more confusing. Sally Newell-Cohen leads communications, and me, Sally Costerton, I lead engagement, just for any of you who don't know me. Ash, over to you for last words before we turn to Tanzania and the block schedule.
Thank you. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, everybody, for providing your feedback and commentary. I appreciate it. I think if I'm reading the sentiment correctly, there isn't a lot of love for the webinar format. There is a broad understanding of the potential for Zoom bombing, and there is a suggestion that we ought to explore possible ways through which we can limit the potential for such Zoom bombing. And one such could be, for instance, to make available information about sessions only to registered users rather than through a public broadcast. That may entail making a request of the SOAC leaders to spread the word amongst the constituencies that registration is a prerequisite in order to participate. That way we can limit the participation where it's necessary to only registered users, who thereby would have signaled to us who they are. We won't be in a position to authenticate them, because that would require some third party to say they are who they say they are. But the fact that they're registering with us would also allow us to track back to who they claim to be, if indeed we can trace a Zoom bombing incident to them. Of course, the plenary sessions, we can continue to use the webinar format, and they are the open ones anyway and don't have the facility for Zoom bombing. That may be the nature of how we resolve where we currently are, and we'll see what we can do for the immediate forthcoming meeting with that as feedback. If I misread any of the signals that we received today in my summary, please say so on the chat channel. I'll continue to monitor that. Thank you, Sally. Back to you.
Thank you, Ash. That's a very helpful summary. Right. I'm going to switch gears slightly now to ask Tanzanika to introduce for you where we have got to with our thinking on just suggested ways of tackling a schedule that we hope will maximize productivity and participation. So the goal here is to think about the time and the time zone specifically. And this is what we've been playing around with a little bit to share with you now. So going over to you, Tanzanika.
Thank you, Sally. And I think everybody on this call, I recognize your name, so you probably know me, but I'm Tanzanika, often referred to as the scheduling queen. So we are on this third virtual meeting now. The schedule has been pretty light so far. I think we've done good with it. But as Sally just mentioned, there's this ongoing issue, challenge with time zone that continues to be hurtful towards participation for some people. And we see it repeatedly in the comments and feedback. So our goal with this block schedule was really to try and address that issue a little bit more by providing some more flexibility with the schedule, spreading out the days a little bit. So this high-level slide right here is just showing you that we've got the prep week scheduled at the beginning of October. And then what we are proposing is that we take 3 days in the following week to do just your internal SOAC work. So that would include the sessions that you typically have on constituency day and other days. And then have the third week, which is really within the official days in the meeting, focus on plenary sessions. Again, it's all about flexibility. So when we talk about prep week, we are thinking that it can include things like prep for sessions with the board, and other things really based on what your preference is to include there. So go ahead and, Kim, if you can go to the next slide. So the SOAC internal work days, I'm sure you might have different ways you'd like to refer to this, but this will be the same blocks of time that we will have for the next week that I'll show you. So it's just to say that you can schedule as you wish, just like what we did for Kuala Lumpur. During the official blocks, you would be able to get all services that you might want, specifically to ALAC and GAC, all the interpretation, the scribing needs, and those things. But just like we did before, we are also want to make sure you know you can schedule outside of those times. So if you have other internal meetings that you want to schedule at different times of the day, those can be scheduled, and we will post all of those on the schedule, the official schedule this time, to make sure it's easy for you to see everything you have scheduled. And the way we'll do that is by sort of doing some sort of tagging to the sessions to make sure it's clear what's happening within the official schedule and what's happening outside of the regular hours, but it'll all be accessible in the same place. Kim, go ahead and go to the next slide. I'm going to try to go through this not too slowly because our primary goal today is to get your feedback on this. Keep in mind it's all draft. This is just our idea of how we can provide you the flexibility that we think you're asking for. So it's really important to get your feedback on this. During this plenary week, we have, as you can see, 3 plenary slots. Those can be expanded or reduced depending on how many topics you think you want to cover, and that's another thing we'd like to ask you about today. And then we've got our usual public forum. XCI is referring to cross-community interaction. So these meetings could include the joint meetings with the board, or you can schedule those in the prior week. Again, it's all about the flexibility to do that. And we're sort of looking forward to you telling us what makes sense to you. I know, for example, some groups, you know, have a strong need to meet with the board really early versus some of you may be happy to do that on Wednesday at the end of the meeting. So this is what we're looking at. Again, we only have 20 minutes, so I think I want to, Sally, stop there if we can get some feedback on this current block schedule. And I do want to point out there are some minor changes from the one you already received via email. We're sorry about that, but we realized the day was slightly too long in terms of our tech teams and probably for you as well. So I already see some hands up.
Thank you, Tansy. Sally Costigan for the record. Let's kick off the questions and the discussion. So first I have Ashley and then Jonathan Robinson. Ashley, please.
Thanks. Yeah, this is Ashley with the Registrar Stakeholder Group. Could you go back one slide to the breakdown of all the SOs and ACs? Thanks. First, could you give us a brief explanation as to what Open Zoom 7 is? But before that, I just wanted to note that the GNSO in particular has a lot of different moving parts to it, and having to organize all the different groups that are within the GNSO might be a challenge. I think one of our concerns, at least from the Registrar Stakeholder Group, is that we were a little bit nervous that we might find ourselves in a situation of scheduling 12 plus hours a day just to, you know, make sure we get everything crammed in here depending on how it's staggered. But otherwise, I'll just stop short there and get some additional details on Zoom 7. Thanks.
Yeah, so this is really high level, so I want to make sure it's understood. This is not a limitation. It's not that there's a limit of 7 rooms or that each group can only have 1 room. Open Zoom 7 is just to indicate that there is also room for other groups or other meetings to happen as well. So, and I know in particular, of course, that the GNSO often on constituency days and stuff has multiple stakeholder groups and constituencies meeting concurrently. So that will not be an issue. The important thing will be for us to get a handle on exactly what the needs are as early as possible so that we can get all of our tech teams in place.
Tansy, do you want to manage the queue?
Sure.
I can if you want me to, but otherwise I'll keep interrupting you.
I think Jonathan Robinson is next. Somebody yell at me if I'm wrong.
Thanks, Tansy, Sally, and others on the call. A couple of things. First of all, thank you for giving this some thought and trying something different. It's great. And I think there are elements that seem attractive, and I think it's difficult because there are challenges with this. It does feel the one thing that doesn't seem to be answered at a high level is that this seems to be, we are dealing with ICANN 69, and I'm not sure where the question of 70, 71, and 69 is being dealt with. So it would be very useful to understand how, you know, stretching it out a little, but that's separate to the question you're asking right now, which is how do we deal with this sort of tactical response to 69? Some immediate feedback we had was, oh my goodness, you're expecting us to have a 3-week ICANN meeting. And I can see how that immediate reaction happens. And I can also see how, as you explain it, it may not be quite as it seems in that way. I heard Sally Costerton at the beginning talking about time zones, and you made a coherent point, Sally, and a good point about how and why one might do it. So, you know, on this, the local time zone. I do wonder, though, in that context, whether the prep week needs to be done in that way. So assuming for a moment one accepts that week three, that the actual meeting needs to be on the local time zone for whatever rationale, the prep week could be staggered and could be on you know, needn't necessarily be on that local time zone, and perhaps not even the SOAC internal work days either. That being said, you've just explained that the SOAC internal work days are up to the SOAC to work within that, so there's quite a bit of flexibility there. But I would question why the prep week needs to be on a single time zone. And I think that I'll stop there. Thank you.
And I'm going to defer that one possibly to Mary. I'm not sure that we do need to adhere to, you know, the specific time zone for prep week. But I'm going to defer because I don't want to say the wrong thing, and I haven't been part of those conversations.
Mary, do you want to call? Oh, I tell you what, Jonathan, if you wouldn't mind, could we take the rest of the question? Well, we'll take a couple more questions, and then I'll pause, and we'll go back to Mary and daughter, unless it's very straightforward. So that's a big question about yours, two big questions. One is about, are we going to have a discussion, a more strategic discussion about the stretching concept beyond just one meeting, or is this just a sort of pilot? We presented it as a pilot, but it's an interesting point. And the second question, could we stagger the prep week to have a bit more of a flexibility around different time zones to manage that time crunch? Mary, I'm going to come to you in a minute, but if I may, before I do, I'm going to go to Jonathan Zook. And maybe, is that an old hand, Jonathan Robinson? Thank you. Okay, so why don't we do Jonathan and then Susan, and then I'm going to come back to you, Mary. Jonathan.
Thanks, Sally. Jonathan Zook here. The point I wanted to raise was about interpretation and the impact of this structure on interpretation. Because I know that, again, for the at-large, interpretation is really essential for nearly everything that we do. And so the fact that, for example, the 2 weeks prior to ICANN 68 was without interpretation was very difficult for us. It affected participation, et cetera. And so having built into this a process of having to decide when we may or may not have interpretation, I think is one of the challenges that we'll continue to see. And so I raise that as something to address directly, but also ask that you take a look at some of the things that are out there for machine language translation, such as Streamer that iStock is using quite a bit, as a kind of a backup alternative to the vastly superior live interpretation, but still make that available. It has good Zoom integration, et cetera, for the times at which live interpretation is not available.
Susan.
Hi, it's Susan Payne. I'm here for the IPC. Obviously, we haven't had extensive feedback from IPC members on this yet, but there was some initial reaction, and it was somewhat similar to the concerns that Jonathan Robinson mentioned about the sort of preliminary reaction was, goodness, you know, it was hard enough doing you know, a one-week meeting where people were having to, you know, do their day job and then, you know, log in a different time zone, you know, as we did for ICANN 68, let alone have this now become a kind of three-week meeting where we face that prospect for some people. And you know, a real feeling that, you know, this has the risk of excluding anyone who isn't a kind of domain industry person So anyone who you know, as many of the IPC members do, has another job, you know, they can't spend 3 weeks working on Hamburg time, you know, particularly on a schedule which certainly when we first saw it looked like it was from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., you know, for 3 weeks. Now, I do understand that you know, might be an initial reaction, and some of what's been explained now here suggests that risk isn't entirely going to be realized. But I think the SOAC internal work days, you know, because of the way they're being described as, you know, with a degree of flexibility with the SOs and ACs making their own decisions about how they will use those, to the extent that those work days are maybe include public sessions organized by particular SOs or ACs, where they'll be discussing topics of wide community interest. You know, there is still a risk that at a minimum this becomes a two-week meeting plus the prep week. Because, you know, if the GAC are going to be talking about subsequent procedures extensively in during that SOAC internal workday week, then I need to be listening to what's happening even if I'm not a member of the GAC. Do you understand what I mean? And so there's some concern that we are just making a two or three-week meeting out of something that would ordinarily have been a one-week meeting, and really concerned that shouldn't end up being the case, as it will be excluding for many people who aren't employed in the domain industry.
Thank you, Susan. Okay, let's go now to Mary, and I'd also like to go to Sally, because we've got a couple of fairly big questions there. One is about the question about flexibility of time zones in prep week, and the second question is about what does that mean and what does this approach as a whole mean for interpretation and availability. And you've raised a third point, I think, Susan, which is sort of quite fundamental about, you know, what is the, you are expressing very well the trade-off question. You know, what is the, you know, what is the sacrifice, the lose, if you like, from stretching it out versus the issue for people operating. Are we going to lose participation from different parts of the world if we end up biasing to an East Coast, which tends to be an East Coast time zone, if the SOAC groups move to work within their own working, pick their own working time zone. That's the thing to just sort of, we have to think about, be mindful of, is do we then bias too far away the other way from a time zone that allows us to get participation? So that's, I'm not saying we will, it's just something we have to think about. Going to you first, Mary.
Thanks, Sally. So I'll address the prep week question from Jonathan really quickly and make a comment about what Susan's just observed, because they both have to do with the flexibility that we've been talking about. I did put the suggested answer to Jonathan in the chat, but I may have gone by too quickly, and some people may be on the phone. And essentially, while this three-week framework is meant to help all the groups plan accordingly, we do anticipate that there will need to be some crossover, and that when we say things like prep week, we don't necessarily mean just the usual pre-meeting informational webinars that we've now started to hold. In other words, prep week will include those informational webinars. What they are and how many, we don't know as of yet. But to the extent that groups are willing and slots are available, prep week can also be used for each of your group's prep sessions, say for joint meetings and so forth. So that is one example that we thought of as the flexibility that this schedule could provide. To Susan's point, that seems very similar to a point that Brad made in the chat as well, and it is one of the concerns that we are very aware of. It applies both to folks who work within the domain community and industry and those who don't because of day jobs, other commitments, time zones, etc. So all I can say for now is that it will require coordination, certainly across the staff teams that support all of you, including and especially in the policy team. So I just want to assure you that we're aware of it. We will certainly do our best to make sure that the coordination that we do takes into account all of this, and that this is always top and foremost of our minds as we prepare block schedules for each of our groups. Thanks, Sally.
Sally, I'll just go to you on the sort of bigger question on the availability of interpretation.
Yes.
On this kind of stretched model.
We, there's a couple of things I think I would say. One is, thank you for the suggestions. I think that there's always opportunities to look at other approaches like machine translation, although we do lose context and quality there. But what the interpretation team will do, headed by Christina, is we're going to continue to look for creative solutions over an extended period. Of course, we have to take into consideration costs and volume of resources and making sure they're available, but we're committed to trying to find ways to make that available where necessary. And I'm going to actually ask Christina to share her thoughts as well, if you don't mind.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much, Sally. This is Christina Rodriguez. I just wanted to bring a quick point to it. So ICANN-68 was the very first meeting where we had deployed, you know, and launched the RSI platform. So there was a lot of prepping done by the entire group of interpreters and the ICANN Language Services team. With that, we were not really available, and we had to cut the days that we provide, for example, teleconference interpretation to the community a little earlier, so that you have an idea. So we started training on a daily basis almost for 3 weeks prior to the two first prep weeks. So that's why we were not, you know, available. This is not the case for ICANN-69 and moving forward. So prep week, as Mary Wong said, could not only be used for the webinars that are the set webinars, but also, you know, having, looking into the how we schedule things and the time frames and so on between sessions, be also very workable for other sessions for other community members and groups. And with that said, before we go we enter those 2 weeks of prep weeks, we can have we will be available, of course, to provide all the support the community needs regarding language services. That's it.
Thank you, Christina. I have two more questions in the queue, and we have 7 more minutes, and I want to be respectful of people's time. So after we've taken the 2 questions, I'm going to hand back to you, Tanzanika, for prompts for next steps. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, I have Manal and Sebastian. Manal.
Thank you, Sally. And frankly, I was going to take down my hand because I think all my points were made. I was going to echo what Jonathan Zook said on real-time interpretation and translation and whether this will be available throughout the 3 weeks or not. I was also going to flag that the prep week, we're avoiding Fridays on the internal work days and the plenary week, but not on the prep week. And I was wondering whether, because Friday is already a weekend at some parts, but now given that the other days are working days, I'm not really sure whether what would work best for the GAC, and maybe I need to consult before proposing something now. So I'll stop here and we will consult and get back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Manal. Yes, good point. Last question for you, Sebastian.
Thank you, Sally. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Just to say that I think it's a very good proposal. Now we can try to enhance it, but the fact that there is different things going on and that separated, of course, I hope that it will not be 5 days of work during the 3 weeks, but that's one point. The second is that it's important for at large that we are spread all around the world. Therefore, when a meeting comes to one region, it's a pain for the other, but it will be the pain next time for this region. Therefore, we like the fact that it go from one place to another place, and we take that into account. Maybe you can a little bit think about how to call prep week, because prep week is with an image. It's what staff has done with that. But if you take what we have worked when we were in the meeting strategy working group, we were talking about having a webinar, preparing a meeting, and not having a presentation during the meeting face-to-face. Now, with this, it could be organized that in during the first week, we organize such a webinar or discussion, but the discussion will be, during the plenary week or the meeting where we will meet, and that will decrease the time of presentation and increase the time of discussion at that part of the meeting. And last point, definitely interpretation. If you find other solution to have that open the 3 weeks, it will be great if we end up with 3 weeks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian. Can I turn back to you, Tanzanika? I know you want to mention the P word, and we need to understand. We have to let you do that. We may need to work out some next steps as well. So I give you back the floor.
So first, I'll say that we will send this updated block schedule out so that you can look at it some more. We should utilize the mailing list. We always do good when we start having conversations back and forth on the mailing list. And so, we want to get this into a shape that, the majority of you feel works. All of you, preferably, feel works. There's no intention for every slot that we show in these days to be filled. So it's not to suggest that, you have to schedule over something during prep week or something during these internal work days. So hopefully you can continue to give us feedback. Take the draft to your group and let us know what you think, and we will also go back to the drawing table and see if we can take some of your comments and make any additional changes. When it comes to the plenaries, I wish we had time to have our usual discussion. We really want to know, are there topics you already have in mind, things that we had on the list before that should have carried over, and figure out, do we need to do a formal process for having you submit proposals, or are there already some topics you have in mind? So we can also do that on the mailing list. We'll prompt you to do that. Manal, I see your hand up, and I want to give you the opportunity to ask a question if you have one.
Just very quickly, if the deadline for plenaries is what was conveyed over email, which was 7th of August, I'm just flagging that this might be too tight for the guests. Thank you.
Yes. Can you go to the next slide for me? One more. There we go. So this is our production dates. High level, this is not as detailed as the one that you've got via email, but the dates are the same. So we did have a deadline of 7 August. If you recall in the past, we've always sort of tried to stay away from doing too much in August, which is always a challenge. I'm guessing that you all aren't jumping on airplanes to go on vacation, so you may feel differently about that this time around. So we can extend this to a degree. Also, if we have the block schedule the way that we do, where there's some separation between plenaries during the third week and other meetings during that second week, it will make it easier to fill in the blanks a little bit later and give you more time. We just need to know that what your thoughts are on plenary topics and if it's more time that you need, then we'll find a way to do that. We do need to get forms in for the schedule and get it produced to post by the deadline. So the dates that you see for EMS submissions that are here from the 19th of August through the 4th of September will remain. And we will push for finalizing these details through the mailing list. And if we need to schedule another call prior to the 13th.
Thank you, Tanzanika. I think if people are in agreement, two requests really, apart from in addition to what Tanzanika said, I would suggest, given that how important this is and that we are looking at some changes here, that we encourage a lot of participation on the list, but that we pencil in, we put a holding call in before the 13th. We can always cancel it if we don't need it. If the list has resolved all the issues we need, happy days. But I wouldn't want to deny this group and us the opportunity to, you know, just finesse that discussion more, but on the back of an evolving discussion on the list. How does that sound? Does anybody strongly object to that idea? I'm assuming that the lack of shouting, although anyway. Okay, let's in principle suggest that. The final thing I'd suggest is that on the list, if you could also consider the sort of big meta question in a way that we've kind of posed you today, which as well as the plenary question is, overall, do you really feel that your communities are better served by a 2 or 2.5 week more compressed schedule or a more open and flexible longer schedule? And I know there are lots of it depends aspects to that, and picking those up on the list would be extremely helpful. But it's very useful to just get a sense of the feeling and sentiment in your different groups about that, taking, of course, on board the very important considerations that have been raised by several people on this call. Okay, I look forward to the discussion on the list. We will pencil in a call for that period before the 13th of August, and then if we don't need it, we'll cancel it. But thank you all very much indeed for coming on this call and being so contributive. It's a big group. It makes a huge difference. And we really value your input. And with that, as David would say, I wish you a good afternoon, a good evening, and good night. It always makes him sound like a TV presenter, I think, but he's great at this. And we'll speak to you all soon, and we'll see you on the list. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you, Sally. Everybody, take care.
The recording has stopped.